Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Telecommunications and Electronic Media Practice Group, was recorded on Friday, December 12, 2014, during a live teleform conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Welcome to the Practice Group's teleform conference call. Today, we are discussing the TCPA, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. Please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the experts on today's call. Also, we're recording today's call for use as a podcast in the future. We're very pleased to have our experts with us today. They are Scott D. Delacorte. He is a partner at Wiley Rhine here in Washington, D.C., and Jason D. Goldman. He's a senior telecommunications policy counsel and managing director of the Environment, Technology, and Regulatory Affairs Division of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We usually have opening remarks from our speakers on these calls, but what we're going to do today is sort of proceed by an interview format where I'm going to ask a series of questions and work through these questions, get responses from our guests, but ultimately we'll be turning over to the audience for your questions, so please do be aware of that and please do be ready with your questions. Let me get the ball started here by asking if either or both of you can frame the issue for our audience. Tell us what the TCPA, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, is and what it does. I understand the law was enacted in 1991. Why is it the source of so many class action lawsuits in 2014, almost, you know, over 20 years ago, later? Who wants to take a shot at that question?
Dean, this is Scott. I would take a shot at that. Just to frame things, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act sets up a framework that prohibits making a telephone call using an automatic telephone dialing system, which is basically equipment with the ability to generate random or sequential numbers and to dial them, or to deliver a pre-recorded message, a robocall, if you will, to a number where the called party is charged for the call. So that means to a wireless phone. So you've got those two activities that are really the focus of the act: use of this equipment, this automatic telephone dialing system, or making a robocall, a pre-recorded voice call to a wireless phone. And that's forbidden unless you have the express prior consent in writing of the party to be called. It also prohibits sending an unsolicited fax, an unsolicited ad to a fax machine. There are other restrictions in the TCPA about calling 911 and calling hospitals and things like that, but it's these provisions, these first two that I mentioned, that have given rise to all the class action litigation. The statute provides for a private right of action and for $500 in liquidated damages per violation, which essentially means per call or per text message. And it's that has led to the class actions. If there is an instance in which a marketer should make a large volume of calls to without express written consent, then that's an occasion where that marketer is exposed to a class action lawsuit. And because any marketer would be making large numbers of calls, you can quickly roll up the damages into the tens or hundreds of millions. The act, you know, addresses a real problem. As a general matter, consumers don't like to receive unsolicited telemarketing calls or text messages. And even with the act in place, there's a lot of this activity that occurs that's coming from offshore or from entities that are judgment-proof that's still going to exist. The problem is that the act hasn't kept up with technology, which has created all sorts of novel and useful telephone and text applications for a variety of commercial purposes. And in addition, enforcement has really ceased to be about vindicating any consumer privacy right and has devolved into rent-seeking. It's very profitable to seek technical violations. And even if violations are conduct that the law was trying to prevent, the damages are just so large they don't seem to make any sense. I'll leave it there.
Yeah. Sure.
Jason Goldman?
Yes, this is Jason, and I'll add to that. I mean, I think Scott gave a nice overview of the
of the genesis of the act. Basically, it was people receiving calls at dinner time. Being bombarded with calls at dinner time, and so that gave the Genesis Act in 1991. What we've seen now, though, is that at that time the dominant technology was landline phones, your regular wired phones. Now, with more and more people having cell phones, the laws, restrictions on cell phones that were enacted in 1991, when cell phones were luxury items, very high cost per minutes, those restrictions no longer make sense. And that's what a lot of these class action lawsuits we've seen are regarding calls to cell phones or mobile phones, both calls and text. And so that's sort of the way technology has changed has sort of driven this a lot of these lawsuits, because as Scott mentioned, the act is simply outdated and needs to be updated. And then I would also add that in addition, it's also important to note that in addition to marketing calls, the statute also governs so informational non-telemarketing calls, and this is specifically regarding cell phones. And so those type of calls are things like appointment reminders, billing issues, package delivery, those sort of things, where people want to know, get this information now, and so I think that's also important. That's another aspect of the TCPA as well, and so a lot of the lawsuits are concerning sort of that aspect of it.
Good. Well, I know the chamber has a paper on this, a white paper on this. I imagine it must. I haven't read the paper, but I know of its existence. I imagine it must describe some of the changes that either one or both of you might feel would be appropriate to the TCPA at this point in time. Jason Goldman, can you walk us through that a little bit, and then I'd love to hear from Scott Delacourt as well your thoughts on that.
Sure. This is Jason. The Chambers Institute for Legal Reform put out a paper in 2013. Sort of going over the abuses that are associated with the TCPA, and then actually they just did an update to that paper in a week or so ago, and that update's included in another paper that ILR, Institute for Legal Reform, released. I think it's interesting. So the paper traces the history of the TCPA and also goes and describes some of the abuses. And, I think some of the key points of the paper are that when the TCPA was created, its sponsor, Senator Fritz Hollings, a Democrat from South Carolina, explained that the law was intended to facilitate actions in state small claim courts, which involve smaller sums and often do not require or even allow the participation of attorneys. But today TCPA cases are anything but small. We've seen settlements in the range of $75 million, $45 million, and $74 million, I believe. And so trial lawyers have used the TCPA to file large class action lawsuits. According to the last stats I saw, from January through October of this year, there were approximately a little over 2,000 TCPA lawsuits filed in September in 2014 to date. That compares to just 14 in 2008. So that's an exponential increase in the amount of class action lawsuits that we've seen. The defendants in these cases are no longer just abusive telemarketers. They are businesses, big and small alike, forced to decide whether to reach a settlement with a plaintiff's counsel or to accept the risk and spend significant resources defending itself against an action where alleged statutory damages may be in the millions or billions of dollars. And so the paper sort of goes, and they are most of all the documents that we produced over the course of the year or two, sort of describe this, the history of the TCPA and the abuses that are occurring. The abuses were sort of focused originally in terms of who was bringing these lawsuits. It was sort of a class action cottage industry, but now we've seen it because the damages are so high and the profitability of these lawsuits, these law firms, are so high that mainstream class action law firms are getting involved. And I think in terms of why is that? Because there's no statutory cap on damages. So the damages, unlike a lot of the other consumer protection statutes, there's no cap. And so, you know, at $500 per violation, or $1,500, or $1,500 per violation, you know, multiplied by the number of violations. So if you're thinking, you know, a bank or an airline or some, you know, a big corporation sends out, you know, a blast email, you know, or blast not email, but blast text or auto dial calls, you know, you can see how that adds up very quickly in terms of the potential liability and the millions or even billions of dollars. And so faced with this, consumers or the companies are, you know, in most cases choosing to settle. You know, it just makes financial sense for those companies. But, you know, I think so the paper goes into some of the changes that are needed, such as statutory caps, you know, and the other things we've discussed, you know, are, you know, safe harbor for trying to comply with the law, and different things you can try to minimize risk of running into violations of the law. And we can talk about that as we get further in the call. But I guess, I mean, I think that's a pretty good summary of our paper and where we are right now.
I want to hear what Scott Delacourt has to say about the paper. Before we do that, Jason, can you tell us where our listeners could find the paper?
Sure.
Is it available on the Chamber's website?
It is available, and generally the Chamber actually has. We have a webpage on TCPA, and I'm pulling it up now. And basically the easiest thing is to do a search for U.S. Chamber and TCPA, and one of the first links you should see is our webpage on the TCPA. The link is a little complicated, but if you do a Google search for U.S. Chamber and TCPA, it'll come up pretty easily.
Good enough. U.S. Chamber and TCPA will get you there if you Google it. Mr. Delacourt, do you have any thoughts on the Chamber's white paper?
Yeah, not necessarily on the white paper in particular, other than that it really points up an issue that is ripe for reform. And it's useful to be drawing attention to that. TCPA, in addition, as Jason pointed out, to having technological changes having sort of moved beyond the language of the Act, there are several, you know, structural problems with it. One is that there are no safe harbors in the TCPA. And when I say that, I'm referring specifically to the provisions that have given rise to the class action lawsuits. So the ones dealing with using an auto dialer or to contact a wireless phone or making robocalls, those provisions. There are safe harbors for other parts of the Act, for example, violations of the do not call list. So everyone knows if you don't want to be called by telemarketers, you can put your name on the do not call list and you know, hopefully avoid that. But if a telemarketer were to make a mistake and were to contact you anyway, it's not sort of a strict liability crime. What the law provides, and as it's been implemented, is that if you have a policy as a company, have a policy for managing do not call requests, and you train your employees to comply with that policy, and if you maintain a company specific do not call list and have the computer software in place to monitor the national do not call list, and you nevertheless, despite having all that in place, make a mistake, then you're within the safe harbor and you're not subject to outrageous damages or the exposure to class action lawsuits. There aren't those sorts of safe harbors built in with respect to auto dialers and robocalls. And the result is it really has created this cottage industry, as Jason noted, in finding technical violations. The activity is not oriented towards vindicating a consumer right to privacy, but rather to finding technical violations as a revenue generator. There have also been I'm sorry, Dean, go ahead.
No, go right ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
There have also been a few problematic interpretations of the Act, and I won't go into great detail on these, but you know, the Act has been applied to text messaging, and that's been a particularly fruitful area for the class action bar to bring suits. But the Act doesn't even talk about text messaging. It talks about calls, and it was an FCC order that determined that a call includes a text message. I think that was a very problematic interpretation that could be reversed. There have also been judicial and regulatory interpretations of the term automatic telephone dialing system that have been very expansive. So, for example, companies that have the capacity that have used equipment that is not intended to be used as an auto dialer, but that's in their dialing system, that technology has been construed to be an auto dialer, whether or not the auto dialing capacity is being used. So it's just, it's another area where an overly strict interpretation of the act has led to results that are not particularly productive. And the last couple, I mean, you know, there were when the FCC changed the law to require that written consent be provided when a customer agreed to receive a robocall or an automatically dialed call, they didn't create an exception for customers who had opt-in before the law changed, so it created all sorts of confusion about existing lists. So there's just been a number of problematic interpretations, and it's all in one direction, all towards making the act stricter. And the reason is it's very popular, politically popular, to crack down on spam and robocalls and telemarketing calls. But it's gotten to a point where it's really become constrictive of productive economic activity.
Right. This is Jason. I'll add to Scott's comments. I mean, I think, you know, we've seen a couple of things. Remember when this law was, you know, enacted, you know, they were really going after boiler rooms, you know, people dialing, you know, again, randomly or sequentially, you know, dial telephone numbers. And nobody does that. Like, no legitimate business, you know, does that. They have a list of customers. They don't want to reach, you know, some random person or somebody just in the phone book. You know, they want to reach their customers or their clients or whomever. And so, you know, and the most efficient way of doing that is through an auto dialer, a predictive dialer, or some kind of automated technology. And, you know, that's and unfortunately the statute is inhibiting that innovation. And I mean, we've cited some examples where under some of these expansive court rulings and under the plaintiff's theories, I mean, you could see they could argue that a cell phone is an auto dialer if you have the right software, because it could be converted with the right software into an auto dialer. And so, I mean, I think those are the kind of, you know, the situations that we are concerned about. Also, I mean, just in terms of the other issues out there, I mean, there are some just practical issues that are out there, such as, you know, reassigned numbers. What happens when someone has a phone number and is given the permission to be called on that phone number, but then for whatever reason chooses to get a new phone number but doesn't let that company know that they've changed phone numbers? So the company ends up calling somebody they didn't intend to call, and because that person didn't give their consent, that the company is now now liable for violations of the TCPA. And the same thing is true with wrongly dialed phone numbers. I mean, if I would give my phone number but accidentally transpose a number, or the person taking down the number would enter incorrectly, again, that exposes companies to liability on the TCPA. So there's some really practical, some practical implications of this of an outdated law that needs to be fixed.
Well, Scott, you mentioned there are no safe harbors here. The parts of the act you're talking about here, do they amount then to strict liability statute? Is that the case?
As a practical matter, I would say that they do, and that's again because of the absence of safe harbors, but also because of the sort of the unwillingness on the part of the implementing agencies and to make a reasonable assessment of the act's requirements. And that sounds a little harsh. I don't mean that they're acting with bad intent. It's a very difficult political issue for an agency like the FCC, where of course people don't like to receive unsolicited calls. And they don't like to receive text messages from marketers where they haven't asked for them. But that's a different matter from what the penalties should be, and when those whether those penalties should be assessed regardless of intention. And you know, just to give a sense for the fact that it has operated as strict liability regardless of intent. I mean, one of the cases that where the FCC did provide some relief was a case called Soundbite, and there that case involved class action litigation about the fact that when a customer signed up for a text messaging service and then later decided that they didn't want it anymore, they didn't want the sports scores anymore, they didn't want the horoscopes anymore, and then opted out, so sent a text message that said, you know, basically says quit or stop, they would receive a message after that quit or stop that says you are now opted out. And the issue in the lawsuit was that last text message that says you are opted out is one that to which no consent was provided, because I just said I want to quit. So why are you sending me one more text message? Well, the problem was there were the text messaging industry had been encouraged to do some self-regulation by the Federal Trade Commission and others, and had guidelines on how you were supposed to accommodate consumers. And the guidelines themselves provided that you should send that opt-out message. It was based on studies of consumer behavior that showed if a consumer sent their message to stop or quit and didn't receive something back, they didn't believe they were opt-out, and their activity would be to continue sending that message and, you know, call customer service, be very frustrated, potentially, you know, costing themselves more money, but more just an aggravation point.
So, Scott, and, that's an instance where the FCC provided some relief to the to the business.
That's right. So ultimately, they did. They went through a proceeding to clarify that last message is implicitly consented to. But what was to the point about strict liability? The amount of effort to get there was really pretty extraordinary. I mean, in other words, you had to have a class action lawsuit brought. You had to have a primary jurisdiction referral. You had to have a petition for declaratory ruling filed. You had to take comments on both sides. That kind of activity and expense for this conduct just seemed, that just seems like draconian, and again, a little bit like strict liability.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about consumer harm here. I'm wondering if we can say more about it. It seems like, you know, 25 years ago, when this act comes online, if people are burning through their fax paper, or if we're at a phase in the industry where people are paying large fees for their cell phone usage by the minute, or text messages, even received text messages by the minute, there might be some real damages there. Now it feels to me like it's almost just nuisance. Even when the company's making honest mistakes, the harm to the consumer is maybe nuisance, and I'm not sure how that gets quantified. Am I correct in that assumption? Does it get quantified? And it feels to me like the damages are out of proportion. I mean, if I received a text message, it doesn't feel to me like somebody should have to pay $500 for it. To me, it would go unnoticed. Although, if you're getting one after another, there might be some nuisance damages there. So I wonder if either one of you wants to kind of go in that direction and address those questions.
Yeah, I mean, this is Jason. I mean, I would certainly say, you know, look, nobody wants to get unsolicited phone calls or text. But that being said, you know, the harm these days when many people have unlimited bucket of minutes or unlimited text, you know, the harm is it's annoyance, it's a nuisance, but you know, if you're getting one or two calls, you know, accidentally, or the harm certainly does not equate to the damages that are being sought in these class action lawsuits. And you know, as you know, generally with class action lawsuits, you know, lawyers end up getting 25, 30% or even more of the award, and the members of the class action, the consumers, you know, and pennies on the dollar, and, you know, typically. And so, you know, I think that that's, you know, I think text messages are similar. You know, the harm is certainly not proportional to the damages and the potential penalties that the companies are facing these days.
Is there any discussion of proportionality in the Act? I mean, does the Act pretend to require proportionality, or?
This is Jason. I mean, Scott can chime in too, but no. I mean, it's on a per violation, per, you know, each
right.
violation, each call you received, it's you know, $500 in under one scenario and $1,500 on the other scenario. So that's how the numbers for these class action lawsuits, you know, get up so high very quickly.
Right, Scott Delacorte. I think you were going to say something.
Yeah. No. Just to affirm that there's no proportionality built in. It's essentially liquidated damages. What's interesting is that it's an area where you know, the market has provided a solution. When this statute was adopted, as Jason mentioned, the economics, and you mentioned as well, Dean, the economics of the calling plan were different. And at the time, there were only 8 million cell phones. This kind of idea that it was a called party pays regime. Where it was different from your home phone, where, you know, people calling you imposes costs on you, the party receiving the call. So, you know, there was some concern. Okay, this is a particularly problematic area where if you're called by a telemarketer, not only are they wasting your time, but they're costing you money. But the market has kind of moved past that with these unlimited calling and unlimited texting plans, and it really wasn't to address telemarketers. It was just people found that called party paid regime kind of confusing. But the prices have come down too. I mean, at even where you do have a bucket plan or something, it used to be if you go above your bucket plan on text, maybe the next text is 25 cents a text or 10 cents a text. You just don't see pricing like that. So at this point, the harm is really the annoyance value, or as you say, the nuisance value. And the damages really need recalibration in light of that.
All right. I've got some more questions myself, but we've got quite a few people on the line. I want to open up the floor to questions and at least see if we have questions from the audience. In a moment, we'll all hear an announcement that will say the floor mode is on. At that point, if you have a question, feel free to push the star button and the pound button on your telephone to indicate. So once again, if you have a question, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. And while we're waiting to see who, if anyone chimes in with a question, I think, Jason, you were the one who mentioned the TCPA as a drag on innovation, but you only touched on it briefly. I wanted to give Scott a chance to talk about that and you to say more about that. Is the TCPA a drag on innovation? So that's the question.
Yeah, this is Scott. I think it is. It's a drag not just on innovation, but on productive economic activity. I mean, if you look at robocalling and text messaging from a public policy perspective, these are just tools. There's nothing inherently nefarious about the use of either of those methods for contacting consumers. They can be used for all sorts of useful things. I mean, to tell you your prescription is ready, your package has been delivered, your child's school is closed. But because of the litigation culture, if a company wants to use one of those tools for a legitimate business purpose, they have to think long and hard about whether to do so, regardless of how efficient it is, because anytime they might make a mistake, you know, load up a bad opt-in list or something, they're now exposed to tens or hundreds of millions of dollars in liability. And then, you know, on the innovation front, with the move to, you know, wireless apps and just a software-based economy generally, there's this whole concept of an API, and there are APIs out there for text messaging and for robocalling that are methods of enabling a software developer to include that capability in any kind of software they develop. So you're writing code about anything, and you decide that this is a consumer-facing application, and so if you know these conditions are present, I want the consumer to receive a text message, that kind of thing. It's really, you know, very, very clever, innovative, and now anytime somebody comes up with an application like that, they really have to, you know, run it by the lawyers. They have to, and in many cases, there are a number of petitions pending at the FCC. They've had to take a mother may I approach and go to the regulatory agency and say, hey, can I do this useful economic thing, or is it forbidden by the TCPA? So I think it does chill useful activity.
All right, this is Jason. I'll definitely add to that. I mean, I think, you know, the auto dialers and the automated dialing systems are used for, you know, for pro-consumer benefits. I mean, for example, if there is a massive, you know, data breach where, you know, millions of credit cards have been compromised, you know, it's important to get to notify consumers, you know, in a responsible manner, you know, as possible. And so an auto dialer using an auto dialer is an efficient way or a predictive dialer is an efficient way of doing that. You know, and same thing with any sort of alerts, you know, of that magnitude, whether flight cancellations or what have you. You know, I think in terms of innovation, I think Scott nailed it. You know, nailed it. There are, you know, several petitions, maybe more than several now, from technology companies concerned about how their product will be interpreted by the FCC to make sure that, you know, that they get a green light. And, you know, mother may I approach in this day of the Internet, you know, certainly does not work when technology is rapidly evolving. Having to wait for, you know, regulatory agencies to, you know, to receive a petition, you know, ask for comment on it, get reply comments on it, you know, mull it over, get a decision on it, possibly be sued, you know, regarding that decision. I mean, you're talking a year, 2 years, and I mean, and by that time, the innovation or the, you know, you've lost the window, and so I think, you know, innovation is is being stifled.
All right, we do have a question from our audience, so let's turn to a question in a moment. If you want to join the queue for questions, push the star button, and then the pound button on your telephone. Let's go to that first question now.
David Emerson, a society member in Berkeley, California. This falls on just what was the remarks about innovation. And my question has to do with, and this is something that Federalist members generally have close to their heart, whether marketplace solutions have evolved or what's frustrating them from evolving. In particular, something along the lines of a trusted expert third-party message delivering interface, which takes the burden of regulatory compliance away from the normal sender and puts it in the hands of someone who really sort of knows how to jump through all the hoops. That's one possibility. Or equating this just very broadly in the, you know, these types of messages to email spam. Email spam solutions are now very prolific. And is there any reason why there's a technological or regulatory obstacle to those types of solutions being evolved in also the text messaging space or the telephone call space? I'd like to get your thoughts on just generally whether marketplace solutions are a better place to look than regulatory solutions here.
Yeah, I can take it. This is Jason. I'll take a stab at that. I mean, I think marketplace solutions, you know, I think I mean, look, there are companies who are offering TCPA solutions on this issue. They're offering, saying that we're able to check certain numbers to see whether they still are belong to the customer or client you think they do belong to. The problem is the solutions aren't 100% perfect, and because the statute is essentially a strict liability statute, even one mistake, you know, calling one person will, you know, potentially subjects a company to, you know, to massive TCPA liability risk. And so that's sort of where we're going. I mean, obviously companies are investing in technologies, you know, to the extent they can. They're investing, they're educating their employees, their managers, about how to comply with the TCPA. It's just they're running into real difficulties about, you know, the ability to fully comply all the time, 100% of the time. Companies are running into it's challenging for companies. Scott, do you have anything you can add to that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it is a partial solution, and that activity is out there. Like David says, there are companies trying to offer that trusted third party service and to indemnify the sellers who use their marketing services. In terms of the spam solutions, I mean, I think that's a great idea. I don't know of any that are sort of available to a consumer the same way you can get anti-spam software for your PC, for example. But I do know from having been exposed to some of the telcos and wireless carriers, that they are concerned about this activity on their networks, robocalling and text message spam, essentially, and that they have looked at ways of developing algorithms that would identify that activity and prevent the delivery of those messages the way that in the same way that occurs with spam. I think it's a whole different issue about whether there may be conflicting regulatory currents on that, because there's also a movement afoot to limit the ability of telecom and wireless firms to manage their networks in that way in the net neutrality proceeding. But those people are definitely looking at technical and marketplace solutions.
Right. I believe the National Association of Attorney Generals filed a letter recently with the FCC, and I think the FCC asked for comment on it regarding, any obstacles that the phone companies have in stopping, mass telemarketing spam, and calls. I mean, and robocalls. I think that's, I think that is teed up for debate. And, I think the FCC is actively looking at that, or will be actively looking at that.
This is Dean Royd. I have a follow-up question here on the issue of the trusted third party and sort of farming out this work, I suppose. And I guess I'm a little skeptical, even if there's indemnification by the trusted third party, whether or not that works. I've become aware of situations where insurance companies, for example, have a business model. They have independent agencies all over the country servicing clients and selling insurance policies. So there's a level of remove there. I guess there's an agency relationship, but they're independent agents operating in local communities. Those independent agencies themselves engage outfits to reach out to clients and, I suppose, make cold calls or in one way or another reach out to clients. And it's my understanding that under the TCPA, those insurance companies themselves, the deep pockets, can be found liable for the activities not just of their independent agents but of the third parties hired by the independent agencies. Is that correct? What can be done about something like that?
Yeah, Dean, this is Scott. That's right. There are the TCPA allows for vicarious liabilities of on the part of sellers for the bad acts or the TCPA violation of their marketing firms, provided that there is some sort of an agency relationship. This is one of those areas I mentioned where the statute is already the statute is what creates the issue, but it's been the situation's been made more difficult by regulatory interpretations. Looking at this issue, the FCC found that vicarious liability does exist for sellers in the situation you identified, and that the common law principles of federal agency law apply. But then it took another step and took upon itself the construing federal agency law in a way that made it nearly always the case that the seller was liable for the acts of the third-party marketing firm. And if that sounds a little bit wrong to you, then good, because generally it shouldn't be a federal agency that is construing common law, federal agency law. That's something that's done by Article III courts. And when this proceeding was ongoing, FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai pointed that out in his dissent, and the issue was appealed to the D.C. Circuit, which also agreed and said that it's the activity of Article III courts to promulgate and decide what federal agency law requires, and not the activity of the regulatory agency. But to your point, I mean, the vicarious liability problem is still out there, and I think solving that would actually require a legislative fix.
Let me ask then, short of legislation, let's just assume that the TCPA is as it exists today and working within that legal framework. Is there something that can be done to, and how can it be done if there is something that can be done to keep, to protect the consumers from the bad actors, but also to protect the companies that are, just operating in good faith? And before either of you answer that, let me just remind the callers, if you want to join the conversation, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. That is a solicited request to ping us. So push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. But back to my question, under the existing legal regime, what can be done?
I mean, this is Jason. I think so. In the absence of congressional fixes to the statute, attention is now turned to the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, and there are over 50 petitions on file over the past year or two, seeking various clarifications. A third of them dealing with a fax issue, FAX fax issue, and others dealing with the definition of like auto dialer, definition of capacity, these technology companies making sure what they're offering doesn't run afoul of the TCPA. There's the reassigned numbers issue. There's wrongly dialed numbers. And so there's a lot of these petitions, are out there. And the FCC has acted on, just a handful of them, Soundbite in 2012. And this year the FCC acted on a petition filed by GroupMe and by Cargo Airlines. The cargo airlines was a particularly egregious example of abuse of the TCPA. I mean, common sense abuses or common sense would dictate that what they were being accused of would not be a violation of the TCPA. So, for example, if you order a package on Amazon, you give your consent for Amazon to contact you on your cell phone. But that consent didn't necessarily transfer to FedEx or UPS, and so if UPS or FedEx couldn't find you or had a problem with the package delivery, they were concerned they might run afoul of the TCPA because consent was not given to them, it was given to the retailer. And so the FCC dealt with that issue and came out with a ruling, maybe not as broad or expansive as we like, but it did provide some relief. Now in 2000, the end of 2014, we've been hearing, since the summer, the FCC would soon come out with some decisions on these petitions that have been filed with the FCC. We haven't seen them so far, but the FCC could actually issue a decision on some of these petitions. Alternatively, they could issue a petition for rulemaking, notice of a proposed rulemaking, and then seek comment on proposed changes to their current rules. And so we're sort of in wait and see mode in terms of what the FCC is going to do.
Scott Delacorte, do you have anything on this?
Yeah. I mean, I think Jason really, really covered. I mean, the best thing to do would be a notice of proposed rulemaking and take these issues as a group rather than in onesies and twosies. But it has been surprising to me that the agency has proceeded in some of these very discrete proceedings to give very narrow relief. Jason mentioned Cargo Airline Association. I agree with him that was a clear case where, customers wanted to know that their package is delivered. I don't think a reasonable consumer would see that as as spam or unsolicited. And I mentioned the soundbite case about the bounce back notice that you've been opted out. And so they have taken action in some of those discrete cases, but they haven't taken action in other areas where they have received large numbers of petitions and where taking action could actually give broader relief. So my top three are, I think they could clarify that an automatic telephone dialing system, you know, clarify what equipment they're talking about to narrow that so that we're not talking about everything that could conceivably be used in that way. Second one on my list would be where they required express written consent to receive auto-dialed calls and robocalls. It would have been useful to clarify that where you already have an opt-in list before they change the rule, that you don't need to go out and get express written consent from all of those people. Although I think the window on the usefulness of that kind of relief is closing because the rule changed in October of 2013, and all these petitions were filed and they continue to sit there. And at some point, just to control liability, they have to assume the worst and go out and get that express written consent. And then the third one is reassigned numbers. This whole idea that if I consent to receive robocalls and then I cancel my cell phone service and my number is reassigned to someone else, and it's reassigned so quickly that the next person down the line gets a robocall before they can kind of opt out or take other action. You know, that strikes me as something where the marketer that's calling has no way of knowing that's happened, and it's low-hanging fruit for the agency to just give that clarification that that's not a TCPA violation. So it's not clear to me why they haven't done that, but those would be my top three.
So those are all agency fixes that the agency can undertake itself, it sounds like. What about prospects for changing the law itself, Congress acting? Are there prospects for that? And whether or not there are, what would you recommend be changed in the act itself?
This is Jason. I'll take that one. I mean, I think the prospects are challenging or slim right now. So, you know, as some of the people on the phone might know, in 2011, there was a legislative attempt to reform the TCPA for informational calls, and that attempt fell short rather dramatically. In fact, the sponsors of legislation withdrew their own support for it, and due to, reaction from consumer groups saying this would lead to a delusion telemarketing, which wouldn't because it didn't affect telemarketing at all. It would be a boon to a debt collection, you know, and frankly, you know, it certainly would aid debt collectors in terms of calling people on their cell phones. And also the attorney generals complained about the sort of preemption provisions. And industry learned from that. They realized the legislation was overly broad, not narrowly tailored to what they needed to achieve. And so, you know, but Congress, especially members of the Commerce Committees, felt rather burned by that attempt and so are skittish about taking it up again. But what's happened in the past couple of years, so that was 2011. Since 2011, we've seen an explosion in these ridiculous TCPA lawsuits. And so, I mean, common sense would just dictate that something needs to be done regarding the TCPA. And so, you know, the chamber and others are meeting with members of Congress, discussing this issue, raising the visibility of this issue. But you know, it is certainly a tough haul because they don't want to be seen as allowing additional telemarketer or annoying phone calls to their constituents. And so, you know, we are in there, you know, teaching about how the TCPA is inhibiting important phone calls, inhibiting innovation, and so that is sort of a strategy that we are pursuing this year and will continue into 2015 in the next Congress, and I think that's sort of where we're at with that. In terms of remedies, I mean, we haven't sort of gotten that far, at least the chamber hasn't, but I mean, our paper suggested a cap on the statutory damages. Other ideas are being sort of, are considered and being bantied about in terms of, other solutions. Do you change the definition of iodialer? Do you talk about the definition of capacity? Some of the issues that are, currently in front of the FCC. But, I don't think nobody has reached, definite conclusions about what a reformed TCPA statute would look like. And then the other sort of avenue for potential reform, rather than as a standalone bill, members of Congress or the relevant committees are looking at updating the Communications Act of 1934, which is amended by the Telecom Act of 96 most recently. And so, as part of that, it is conceivable that a fix to the TCPA could be added to that. However, that particular update, I would imagine would be over several years, multiple Congresses. So, in terms of if we want to get something done more quickly, then I'm not sure whether that's the best avenue to pursue, but it's certainly a worthy avenue. So, again, I don't think anyone's made any decisions about, that's the kind of strategy, whether or not it should be added to a different bill or whether or not it should be, a standalone. But because at this point, our primary strategy is to educate policymakers, lawmakers, members of Congress about, about the abuses that are occurring within the TCPA and then go from there.
Scott Delacorte, you want to speak to the prospects for legislative change?
Sure. I mean, in terms of the likelihood, I agree with Jason. It's a tough putt. And then in terms of what it might look like, I don't have a concrete vision, but conceptually, I think one interesting idea is there's already a regulatory regime out there that has been used more successfully than the TCPA with respect to telemarketing calls, and that's the telemarketing sales rule that the Federal Trade Commission implements. And the way that regime is different than the TCPA in several key ways. One, it applies only to telemarketing calls, which is defined as calls made to sell goods or services or solicit a charitable donation. It doesn't apply based on the technology that's used, and so that's helpful. I mean, a lot of the lawsuits that have been mentioned, I mean, the Cargo Association case about package delivery or a lot of these other things where text messages are sent to let you know your kid's school is closed or that it's icy conditions. These things are not marketing. They shouldn't be subject to this statute, and that's the way the TSR handles it. It only applies to telemarketing. The TSR also has some safe harbors. I mentioned a couple times that safe harbors would be useful. And the private right of action is limited. Under the telemarketing sales rule, before someone can bring an action in court, they have to suffer $50,000 in damages to bring an enforcement action. And so it doesn't mean, you hear that and you think, well, that doesn't sound right. So now nobody can bring a suit. But that's not what happens at all under the TSR. Instead of it being enforced by the class action bar, it's enforced by the Federal Trade Commission, and they enforce it very actively. They file these, they enforce that regulation all the time. They send CIDs, they bring in enforcement actions, and they impose consent decrees. But they, when they do that, they, the penalty is some sort of a fine that's calibrated to the harm, and it doesn't get anywhere near the tens or hundreds of millions that the TCPA does. And I think that's a good way to go because, the money has to come from somewhere. And when these TCPA suits are filed and when the settlements are reached, it may feel like, hey, it's a victory for consumers, but it's really pyrrhic because the expense of those suits just get passed on to consumers. It's really the class action bar that's benefiting.
We've got just a couple minutes left. I want to, before we adjourn the call, I want to give, we got one more question pending here. So let's take a final question if we have time for this.
Yeah, I'm constantly. I just got a call this morning from Card Services, and it doesn't seem to me the government is pursuing these guys. They're all using the same tape, and they have some sort of a credit card scam. They're working through this thing, and I've complained numerous times to the Federal Trade Commission using their forms, and nothing seems to stop them.
Right. This is Jason of the Chamber. I mean, Rachel or whomever, Margaret, Card Service is a famous example. I mean, in fact, it was the subject of an FTC, it came up a lot during an FCC roundtable on robocalls a year or two ago. And, I think in the FCC, the Federal Trade Commission, I'm talking about, the Federal Trade Commission actually has had a contest out there to see if anybody could design equipment or software that would block these type of calls, preventing illegal or unwanted fraudulent calls is an absolutely beneficial purpose of the TCPA, and nobody disagrees with that. I think what Scott and I have been talking about is the calls that are that consumers do want and are important to consumers, and yet they are being the companies who are offering these calls or providing these calls are being have a severe litigation risk from the trial bar. But but to your point, I don't think anybody disagrees with anything that we can do to crack down on illegal, fraudulent telemarketing calls. It's important to pursue those avenues, different strategies as well.
Yeah, I would just add on that. I mean, it is a difficult issue because from the consumer point of view, you're getting these calls and you're not differentiating. But I would just point out that the class action bar is really not interested in Rachel from Card Services, which is the one that's annoying consumers, because there are no assets there. That's a true fraudster. Somebody, I don't know exactly how that one operates, but it's offshore or something. It's something that's difficult to track down. If there was a legitimate company that was doing that, the FTC wouldn't need to have a contest about how do we stop this, how do we find this person. The class action bar is more interested in, when a brand name corporation, Fortune 500 company, uploads a list without a bad list and sends some unconsented text messages, because there's a deep pocket there. So they're not solving the problem that consumers are concerned with.
We've got one question pending. So with your indulgence, gentlemen, let's take this final question.
Yes, it's David Emerson. Help on about a second question here. The situation that's being described here is comparable to, well, I guess what Samuel Francis, paleoconservative, would call anarcho-tyranny, where you have one group which is, there's a succession of anarchy. They don't care what the law is. They do what they want. They're beyond the reach of the law. They're judgment-proof. And another group who is just generally, they are law-abiding, but they deal with the burdensome, costly, and potentially punitive aspects of the law. We also see this in gun control. There are people who, honestly want to comply with all the gun control laws, and it's extremely burdensome, and there are criminals who could care less. Very similar type of situation. So following on to the prior question, I understand that the focus here is on the class action litigation, but what thoughts are there, at least from any of the panelists, to deal with the offshore, beyond the reach of the law, the judgment-proof actors here?
Well, I mean, this is Jason of the Chamber. I mean, there are a couple things. I mean, obviously increased resources to law enforcement, whether it's the FTC or Department of Justice, to go after illegal scams and fraudsters, that's certainly helpful. Basically, just figuring out the relationship between these groups, where these calls are coming from, trying to track them down, using various treaties to get a hold of these people and to bring a stop to these fraudulent or illegal calls. The other thing is technology to block these type of calls. And as I mentioned before, I think there is some question about whether or not the phone companies are legally able to do that. They certainly can monitor the traffic that goes through their networks, but there is definitely some legal questions concerning their ability to to discriminate against certain, you know, to content on those calls and to block certain calls. You know, that does not, you know, so that is, you know, those are a couple avenues of software and law enforcement resources.
Yeah, I would just agree with that. I think as an earlier caller brought up, I think it's going to be a technology solution there, some way of either the consumer identifying the number as one to be blocked, which it's problematic because that the number that particular message comes in from will change all the time, or giving the carriers the flexibility who have greater tools to identify, you know, when that communication is coming, and they have, you know, greater abilities to identify it as its source or what it looks like as a signature on their network to block it.
Well, gentlemen, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it right there. My thanks, we've covered a lot of territory. My thanks to both Scott Delacorte at Wiley Ryan and Jason Goldman at the Chamber of Commerce. I certainly appreciate you guys showing up today. A reminder that the paper mentioned earlier is available on the Chamber's website. If you Google the Chamber and TCPA, you should get to that link. And to our audience, thank you for calling in. Thank you for your attention and your thoughtful questions. I did not make a programming announcement of our upcoming slate of calls, but we are in town next week, and we do have at least 4 calls scheduled at this point. So check in at the Federalist Society's website for a schedule of those calls. I do know the first of them is on Monday, and I think that call concerns immigration. But until that next call, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.